This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of April 15th. I'm John Gibson, and with me early on a Sunday morning is my buddy Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy? I'm the one who's asleep, it looks like.
That was not a yawn you saw.
Hey, I know what a yawn looks like.
as a buddy of ours used to say, says, "Are you got a case of that? You got that illness from the guy who used to be a quarterback for the Baltimore Colts, Johnny Yawnitis."
Oh, starting me off with that, are we? Ouch! Oh.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you got
like
you
taking a sack before I even start and drop back to throw.
Oh, you started me, so it's your fault. I'm blaming everybody else today for. Yeah, I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing fine, and we want to dedicate this show to Wayne Grasek, whom we lost in 2017 around this time in April.
And jokes we are still remembering this morning.
That's right, and putting out there, I guess, for public consumption. But always think about you, Wayne, and keep you in mind. And it has been very sad without you, but we keep going strong here. So. Mm. We'll keep him in our memories. On this week's show, we have a chat with Cody Ponce of the Rakuten Eagles. We comment on week three of action, go rocking with Roki real quickly, and then look at Tommy John surgeries and MPV and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, in the final, just before the final preseason game of March for the Yomiuri Giants and Rakuten Eagles, I was at Tokyo Dome and had a chance to speak to Cody Ponce, and like many other new imports who came during COVID, it was the first time I'd had a chance to talk to the big guy, and it was a lot of fun. He's a sort of a bundle of energy. In his first two seasons with the Nippon Ham Fighters, now Cody pitched interestingly enough for sort of a what for a few years has been sort of the Japanese he pitched two seasons for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and then he pitched for the Japanese version of the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Nippon Ham Fighters. And he has, before this season, he pitched in 24 games and he started all of them, and he has one complete game and one shutout, which were both in a no-hitter.
Yeah, came in the same game, yeah.
That was it, yeah. So he entered the season 7-10. I think he's 1-1 this year. He won his first game against the Fighters. And so we talked to Cody and about different things, and I was especially curious about what it was like playing for Tsuyoshi Shinjo. So we'll see how eager he is to answer that question. All right, take it away, Cody.
Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is new Rakuten Eagles and former Nippon Ham Fighter pitcher Cody Ponce. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's an honor. Honor to be here, and thank you so much.
First question is, what have you learned? This is your third year in Japan. What have you learned about yourself, maybe, that coming to Japan helped you?
You have a lot to learn. Learned a lot of bad words in Japanese.
Okay, that's important.
Yeah. Thing I've learned about a different culture, you know, about how special the whole world is, not just America, not just everywhere else, but how individuals in a different country can also have such a beautiful culture.
Okay.
Especially here in Japan, about how much like respect and honor and how everything goes into everything. So that's been it's been pretty cool. Also about like the respect of like the fans and the people.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, in the States, like, I know, like, football players and baseball players and a lot of professional athletes, just all of us in general, like, we can go out, but, like, everybody bombards you if you're well-known. So it's, like, here, everybody respects you for who you are, and, like, they'll, like, kind of, like, notice who you are, and then they'll ask you if they can take a picture rather than just, like, coming up and just say, take a picture with me.
Okay.
So, like, that's been pretty cool. Like, food, everything, just, like, immersing myself into this culture has been amazing.
Okay, tell me about your time with Nippon Ham. First, you went from the Dome.
Yep.
And then you went to Escon Field.
Yep.
How was that change?
It was a beautiful change.
Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful ballpark.
Yeah. But, like, being able to pitch in such a historic ballpark, right? Yeah. So, like, the Sapporo Dome was historic to Otani and to Darvish and to Shinjo and, like, all of these guys who have been there, done that, gone to the States and, like, played in that stadium. To be able to have played in the last games in the last season there for baseball was amazing.
Interesting.
And then, obviously, moving to Escon, you go to the big league ballpark,
right,
which, you know, unfortunately, sucks to say, but everything here is pretty old, so, like, not much has been updated in the locker rooms and in the stadiums. So having a brand-new ballpark was amazing.
I'll bet. Now, tell me about the baseball and what you learned about the baseball here, because obviously they think about it differently. I mean, and also Japan has kind of a fault-finding culture. You know, if you make a mistake, that's the big thing rather than what you do positively.
Yeah, I think they play baseball in not a completely different way. They play baseball in the most simplistic way. Like, get on, bunt them over, hit them in.
Yeah.
Get on, bunt them over, hit them in. Like, that's just the old school way of baseball.
Does it require any adjustments from you?
For sure. Yeah. I know that they're going to be aggressive very early on.
Mm-hmm.
They can adjust to off-speed breaking balls pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned, like, I just went into the history of baseball here, and I just kind of sat down and was able to learn about their swings and to learn about the way and the reasons why they swing the way they do. And it's because of the old samurai ways and being able to balance power from one foot to the next and being able to keep the bat in the zone for as long as they do. So learning how to pitch to that, learning how...
That's a challenge.
Yeah, it is, for sure. But it's a fun challenge, and I get to do it every year, and I get to do it every 7 days, which is another thing that's kind of weird but kind of a blessing altogether, is I get 6 days off and I get to pitch every seventh, so it feels like I'm back in college again.
Yeah.
But I do kind of miss a five-day rotation. Like, you get antsy after day three and day four. You're like, all right, cool, I get to go out there tomorrow. But you don't. You had to wait another 3 days, and it's just like, okay, missing that day five start's always kind of been something I love.
Those days when you wish you were a two-way player so you get on the field?
Nope. I don't know about that. I think I like throwing the baseball rather than trying to hit it. Okay. You know, everybody says, like, you just got to hit the barrel. I'm like, well, you got half an inch, and you're out, or or you got to hit. So, no, I enjoy this game. I mean, being here, again, being with a new team, these guys with Rakuten embraced me with open arms, made me feel like a brother, make me feel like a teammate, make me feel like a friend. Strength coach and staff, been amazing. Translator Tomo-san's been amazing. Everybody's a great year. And I can't say, I could say the same thing about Nippon. You know, like, everybody was great over there. Obviously, you know, I wanted to go back, but, you know, things happen and the way it is. And I got to thank them for everything that they've done for me, like, allowed me to play for 2 years. And now I get to have fun and go against them this whole year. So I'm looking forward to that. It's kind of just like, it'll be fun to battle against, you know, old brothers of mine.
How much, how interesting was it playing for Shinjo? Because he's unique.
I'll say the next question, please.
Okay.
Because, I mean, it was different, you know? Yeah. Every manager has a different way of they like to manage
Absolutely.
A game. So, he managed it the way that he thought was best.
Yeah. Well, that's probably true.
Yeah.
Was it ever a distraction?
No, never a distraction.
Okay. It seems like the first year that was sort of like his thing.
It was different. You know, I'm never used to seeing a manager in such a spotlight role.
Yeah.
You know, you have Joe Torre and all these other greats that Mike Socha. I mean, think about Mike Socha when he was with the Angels and, like, what he was able to do. Like, nobody ever saw him do any of that kind of stuff, but we're here in Japan.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a completely, again, different culture, different way of life, different way of baseball. And I can't knock Shinjo at all because, like, he went to the States and he was in a World Series and he's done it. So I respect him. I respect the way he managed the game. I respect him the way he was as a player. And, again, I was just so grateful for them to give me the opportunities that they did.
Okay, well, let me ask. Now, I don't know Shinjo. I do know Imai. He's just a straightforward, say what he thinks.
Yeah, Imai's great. We talk on a daily basis, you know, and that's what was a little different. I didn't really talk to Shinjo all that much, but Imai, like, I mean, he comes up and has a conversation with me every day. Asks me how I'm doing. He loves to golf. I love to golf.
Oh, okay, brilliant.
So we get to talk a little golf. talk a little golf swing stuff every once in a while. He did say he would probably take my money on a golf course if we ever played, so that would be, and I don't doubt him on that, but I did say I'd take his money if we played a long drive competition. So,
okay.
No, Imai's great. I'm excited to see what he does for his first year, obviously. I think he's going to do great.
Now, let me ask before they run my ass out of here.
You're with me. You'll be fine.
Yeah, no, they're going to come in. They're going to got a hook for me. The guy's standing there waiting. What I wanted to ask about some of the players you've maybe enjoyed most watching in Japan, or you've learned from, or
Yamamoto, Yoshida, everybody who's been here for the last 3 years that I've been here. Obviously, you got to say like some of the greats, like Masahiro, like being able to be his teammate, but also get one of my first wins in Japan. What was it? I think it was 2 years ago or a year ago. Him and I got a W against him, and like I'll never forget that. So that was kind of cool. But you know, like again, like everybody like we have in our dugouts been great. Watching everybody on every opposing team has been fun. But I mean, yeah, I mean, how can you not love watching baseball when you have the opportunity to? Which is the unfortunate part about Japan. Like starting pitchers don't get to stay in the dugouts during every game. We get to go home, which is nice. But like, I miss watching and shooting the crap with my teammates on the bench. So,
yeah. I watched that Tanaka come out. I was hoping to talk to him today. I watched him walk out in practice, and everybody else is like going around the players. The sea parted for him.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Again, like that's just the respect in which he's earned, and everybody knows that. I know that. It's nice though because him and I have a great relationship already. I have a great relationship with all the starters. Shoji, Hayakawa.
I liked him last year.
Everybody's great.
Hayakawa, looking forward to seeing too.
So. He's going
to
be good this year. I'm excited for our starting staff. We'll be solid. Just all about just keeping the RAs down and going out and competing.
Okay, well, thanks so much for talking to us and taking your precious time.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you. You guys have a great day.
Okay,
thank you very much, Cody. It was a real joy meeting you. Infectious almost, John.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I did get to talk to him last season, and I said, hey, we've got a podcast, and we'd love for you to be on. And he said, great, yeah, anytime. And I'm glad you got to talk to him. Of course, I wanted to do the interview, but that's fine. I enjoyed the interview, and I was doing what I usually do, which is I'm listening on my iPhone as I'm heading into work. And, you know, I'm taking notes on my iPhone, and I'm like, yeah. And then suddenly we got to this question about Shinjo as a manager, and Cody says, next question. And I thought, and it's almost as if the train stopped at that moment and time stopped and everything stopped. And my mouth kind of dropped open a little bit, and I'm hanging on every word. and a credit to you for continuing to pursue the topic in a non-hostile way. I thought that was very good navigating of how to handle that situation. But you can hear in Cody's voice that there's a little bit of angst, and that there was something there. And it makes sense because I said, as we watched these games unfold and the decisions that Shinjo would make and the things that he would have his players do, that it has to be taxing for a player to experience that. To have your manager go against the quote unquote book, or throw the book out, or collect all the so-called books and have a bonfire with them as Shinjo is, you know, want to do. And it has to be stressful. Let's put it that way. Because we talked to a player a long time ago. I don't remember his name, but he said, look, you have to remove yourself from the equation and look at yourself basically as one of the pieces on the chessboard, and the person moving them moves them, and you have no choice, and you don't think about that. You just go out and execute and do what you do. And so remembering that and thinking about Cody and how he responded firstly, and then he went on to explain subtly that there were some things that maybe he didn't agree with or he didn't understand, which again goes to communication. I think at the very least, your players should understand the plan. Now, they don't have to agree with it, but you explain to them, and you hear this a lot. We hear this a lot. It's always the the undertones of the stories that we get from players, but they say, well, we took what the defense gave us, or we did with the, well, those are code. That's code. They're speaking in code for, you know, we had a plan and this was the part of the plan and that was not. So whatever you're asking, we that was not part of the plan.
Hmm.
And they understand why. And if you don't communicate to the players the why, then there's just a lot of mystery and it creates a little bit of angst because they know what they're doing as well.
Hmm.
So I just got that sense. Now, he didn't say it, but I mean, he didn't say it bluntly, but I picked up on those things and I think it's interesting. So I'm sure there's more of that. I'm sure there's more of that among some of the players, particularly maybe the foreign players, because we know the Japanese players would never come out and say anything about it, whether it was true or not. So, and it has to be a difficult playing environment if you don't understand all those things. So that was number one. Number two, Cody talking about, and we'll probably, we'll stick a pin in this notion about extra rest and come back to it later in the show. But you know, he says he gets fidgety after a few days and he doesn't work. And it's that it's hard to sit down for, you know, the 6 days and then come back on that seventh day and pitch.
Mm. Yeah, I enjoyed that bit about being on the bench, because that's something that's quite different in Japan from MMA.
Right. So you can't even, I mean, I guess for pitches in the majors, you might be called upon to pinch run or something in a situation.
Or you might be on the injured list and you're in the dugout, you know?
Yeah.
This is the way it is.
Yeah. But, I think it's good for these days, these pitchers to rest. And we'll talk, like I said, we'll talk about that later. And, it's just challenges and hurdles for foreign players to overcome, especially starting pitchers when they come to Japan. It's not just about the baseball, but, you know, if you're fidgety and you want to pitch one day and you're feeling really good and then you have to do nothing and then you come out the next day and you all of a sudden with all that stress and pent up energy, you're too excited or you feel tired because you spent the previous day thinking so hard about your start. And so it's a lot to overcome. I don't know about the dynamics in the organization and everything, but that was really, really a chat that had some deep fodder for thought here. And I hope everybody enjoyed it. So I think you did a good job. But what stuck with you other than the obvious things or including the obvious things?
Yeah, I had the same response to the, you know, Shinjo question. I'm thinking, did he just say next question? and I heard it and go, whoa. Of course, the great first standard, because I tend to ask everybody, as listeners will know, you know, what have you learned in Japan? And bad words in Japanese was the first time I've heard that one.
Yeah, I don't even know that many bad words. I mean, if I know any at all, I'm such a pure angel. Uncorrupted.
Well,
untainted.
For listeners, John has his own peculiar set of bad words that they're just so cute. They don't seem bad at all. it's sort of like, I don't know, it's sort of like inviting 5-year-olds to the adult table.
All right, enough about me.
So a couple of things I thought were really worth mentioning. And one of them was the part about his appreciation. Another common question is what are your thoughts on Japanese baseball? And they play baseball in the most simplistic way, very basic. And they can adjust off speed breaking balls. Now, I thought that was very astute, because one of the comments I remember stuck with me about Ichiro Suzuki, because a big thing about him when he was in Japan was how fast his bat was.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he can generate a lot of bat speed, but generally in games, what he does is he keeps the bat in the zone. and he has a very slow bat in the zone.
Mm.
And he said it right on, is that they have the ability to basically wait. They train to wait on breaking pitches. they could look for fastballs and wait on breaking pitches. And that was quite interesting. And I think the other one is the way they do play baseball in a very methodical and practiced way. And they, of course, my comment is that Japanese people think about baseball a ton in ways that MLB coaches do not. And I think somebody else told me, I don't know if it was I don't know if it was in the pod, if I brought this up on the podcast or not, but I think we have the person who said they, in Japan, they teach you things that they stop teaching you after the first week of your first pro season, your first pro camp.
Assumption is you understand that and you're doing it.
And in Japan, they do it every day. And this guy said, oh, it really helped me because this is stuff that is fundamental. And I hear this a lot from scouts.
Alex Dickerson said that. Yeah.
Alex Dickerson. Okay. Right. Correct. So, okay. I thought that also stuck with me. And so those things were quite interesting. And I really enjoyed it. And he was just a bundle of energy. And of course, you really want to pull for him when he pitches.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, let's talk about the Eagles a little bit here. Hmm. They are 5-7 as we sit here on Sunday morning. So and struggling, but we kind of predicted that. And
yeah, because all our predictions this year are spot on.
Yeah. There's a spot on this part. There's a spot on this part. There's a blemish over here.
Our predictions were so spot on. We need spot remover.
Hey, it's early. It doesn't matter what is going on now. It's early.
I'm just making.
But yes. Fun. Yeah. So the Eagles essentially, I think, have been what we discussed in the prediction special, just kind of inconsistent with the bats, but so are the Marines and so are the Lions for that matter. So that it's so early. We don't really know what's going on out here. We're just watching games. Guys are trying to do their best, keep their jobs. The teams and players who won jobs out of spring are trying to hold on to them and make an impression. So there's a lot of push and pull going on right now, but there's so many wonderful games. I was talking to Jim before we went on mic, and you know, we had two 12 inning games yesterday. One that played to a draw, and the other one, the home team, the Giants, rallied to win it in the 12th. And then we had a tie on Friday night, I think it was, the Hanshin Tigers and Dragons. So a lot of close games, everything's tight, and it's just fun. But speaking of the Eagles, now Cody Ponce pitched five innings on Tuesday, and he was a victim of some questionable calls behind the plate, but he ended up allowing five runs on nine hits and a walk. But the Eagles were spunky and they rallied for some runs. But again, it's just inconsistent. They ended up losing 5-4 in that game. But the run scoring, we just don't see any power with these Eagles. They just the Dragons are kind of getting it done with a bunch of singles. But it's normally hard for teams to just hit singles or hit your extra base hits with nobody on and then end up leaving runners. They only have three home runs here. The Eagles do so far in the early going. And they're getting outscored, so it just makes sense that they're going to struggle. And I'm not sure that that's going to change that much, but they are a fun team to watch regardless of the runs. And Daichi Suzuki, you know, having an impact in some games here early on, that's always a good thing. He's a bundle of energy himself, even as he ages into this veteran role that he has. So they're still a fun watch.
Yeah, he was perhaps one of the most enjoyable chats I had early in the post corona era. In fact, he was at a game at Tokyo Dome when I spoke to him last year, soon after corona became the common cold. And he said, you know, I miss having reporters to vent to. Because he says, because when I'm slumping, you know, my coaches hear it and other players hear it, and you're caught in a feedback loop. But when I tell the press, everybody just goes, oh, you know, everybody just shuts up and listens.
So they eat that stuff up.
and I went like, oh, you must have been talking to other reporters besides me.
Probably.
I said before he finished. So, he had a, I have to mention because he started last week batting 111 and he finished batting three. He's batting 384, I think, headed into Sunday's games.
Right.
He was like every day he was on base like two or three times and had scored a run or two and drove in a run or two. He just was everywhere doing everything. Now the Eagles are in last place after Saturday's games, and they have I'm going to just tell you a little bit about their season so far. They have a Japan worst ERA of, wait for it, 3.22.
Oh, the horror.
Yeah. Well, okay.
It's a really decent ERA.
Well, it's a decent ERA because if I asked you to pick a number, any number between 1,936 and 2022, tell me which year was the last time a team had an ERA worse, the worst team in Japan, or I should say no team in Japan had an ERA that bad.
One more time?
Okay, the last year in which an entire league in Japan finished the year and no team had an ERA higher than 3.22 was 1947.
Okay, I got you. So okay. You're saying it's more a reflection of the ball and
it's a huge
nobody's
reflection.
Scoring. Yeah, okay. The ERA is it's a relatively low ERA to have to be a last place team.
It's extremely low. It's okay. Like it's almost unheard. It's virtually unheard of. I mean, not even when they introduced the mush ball in 2011, and they turned down the lights. They did reduced lighting, and they didn't. They did reduced lighting in games held in Tokyo, the Tokyo area, and Tohoku, where Sendai the Eagles play.
Mm-hmm.
2011 was a historically poor hitter season, and we're worse than that right now.
Yeah, right now. And I went to a couple games this week, both involving the Giants, but one with the Bay Stars and the Swallows, and I saw some balls that were hit hard that kind of didn't fly. But I also saw, I think we're getting a mixed bag, because I did see some balls that didn't seem to be hit that hard that did fly. And last night, Yuma Tongu, who has been struggling with the Oryx Buffaloes and hasn't gotten a lot of hits, he hit a home run to right field, and that ball jumped off of his bat, and I don't think he was really on balance. And I know he was on balance, but I don't know that he... I think he can hit a ball harder, and that ball jumped out. So I think we're getting a mixed bag, but for the most part, maybe there is something about these balls that they're stopping. Teruaki Sato hit a ball, I think on Friday night, off Yuya Yanagi of the Dragons that probably was definitely a home run in every other park in Japan, but it's Nagoya Dome, and then I think it was one of the balls that's not flying as well. So, I do see a little bit of something there, but I'm not convinced.
Yeah, Munetaka Murakami hit one. I think it was on Friday that went to the opposite field.
The ball to the left, yes.
Yeah.
I don't know about that one. I didn't.
Anyway, I thought that one.
I thought he topped it a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit, but.
But for him,
those are the ones 2 years ago that when he topped, they ended up 10 rows back.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So that's the thing. And so that's the one thing. There were, just in case you're curious, there were about 32 games. Since last Sunday, and four of them went 1-0. So that's a fairly high. And three of them went 12 innings. So that's anyway. Yep. So that's that. The other weird thing is that the Eagles, they brought in so many Cebu Lions that they've become the new Cebu Lions. Except for the home runs, in that they draw a ton of walks, which we've noticed, but now they're striking out more than pretty much every other team in NPB.
Mm.
So like the Cebu Lions, in the last decade, really.
Yeah, the big hitting, home run hitting teams. Yeah.
When they led the league by 50, their hitters led the league by 50 or 60 strikeouts every year. So the other thing I noticed was about the Eagles was I'm going to call it double trouble, because the Eagles, although they hit doubles and triples, they don't hit a lot of doubles, but they do hit a fair amount of triples. But they've allowed 29 doubles this season. You know, the home runs are not a thing, but they've allowed 29 doubles, and only the next two teams behind them have allowed 20. So basically more than a third more than the worst other teams in NPB.
In 13 games, yeah. That's
yeah.
A high number. Yeah.
That is 2.5 a game. So, but we have seen, as you probably noticed, we have seen a ton of doubles this year.
That we'd seen a ton.
I think that's the effect of some of that is the home run, the lack of home runs.
Right.
Some of these hard hit balls that are in the gaps are becoming doubles. So, anyway,
A lot of leg doubles too, but yeah. Gotcha.
And people are trying for them.
certainly.
I was to say we could certainly ask Koji Chikamoto about that figure, about the guy's trying to leg out doubles or balls hit for doubles.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to mention was I'm really enjoying this series up in Tokorozawa between the Hawks and the Lions, in part because they're linked this season. Obviously, with the Hotaka Yamakawa leaving, and then the compensation being what's his name, Hiroshi Kaino.
Yeah. Friday was what I called the karma game.
Yeah. So on Friday, Yamakawa struck out 3 times in this game and just had one of those hard to sleep nights. And then he comes back on Saturday and he hits a pair of grand slams, and he did it in consecutive plate appearances. And he's only the second player in NPB history to do that. Do you remember the other player?
It was not Balvino Galvez?
No, it was not. It was Tomohiro Nioka of the Giants in 2006.
Okay, so anyway, so Yamakawa, right, he got seriously booed in his first at-bat at the Dome Stadium, formerly known as Prince, which is pretty rare in Japan. So after that, he didn't get booed very much it was like the Lions fans had their say, and then after that, but they did cheer a whole lot every time he got a strike, and time he made an out, it was pretty loud.
Yeah, and there were some thumbs down, some fans doing thumbs down
that.
To him. Yeah, that was it was pretty testy.
It was testy, indeed. It was. So that's for that. And of course, he had issues last year. And the weird thing I've noticed, because I wrote about him yesterday, was that the news broke on May 11th about the alleged sexual assault, and he was then released. He was then sent down to the minors, and he had already been in the minors at the start of the season, and he played 3 games in the Eastern League, but he didn't play another game for the Lions. They basically banished him from the field. He was rehabbing or something, and then they just decided we don't want him playing at all. So he didn't play the entire rest of the season, and then in September, when the prosecutors announced that they were not going to charge him, they lacked the evidence. They did investigate, but they lacked the evidence to bring charges, ostensibly because they didn't have enough evidence to convict him, which is generally the way prosecutors work. The Lions then said he lacked contrition, and so they suspended him indefinitely. And then they were surprised when he filed for free agency and left. But this is a normal thing for the Lions. They're always surprised when people, they say, we don't need you, up and leave. I mean, it's almost, you could set your watch by it.
We don't want you playing here, but we don't want
stay.
You to go.
Yeah. Exactly. So no, we did have a bunch of fun series. The Eagles and, let me just, there are a couple of notes really quickly then. One is sticking in the Pacific League. The Eagles and Buffaloes had quite a throwdown in Osaka. Leandro Cedeno hit, during which Leandro Cedeno hit three home runs.
Yes, over the series, and, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right, Yutaro Sugimoto in the finale, the Buffaloes won 2-1, in which Cedeno hit his third of those three home runs, and Yutaro Sugimoto reached base four times. And if you can picture Yutaro Sugimoto, picture him scoring on a one-out double from first base.
Yes.
And yeah. doing batter's balk dirt angel after he scored. He did everything but flap his arms in the dirt. It was I love him.
Yeah, that was fun.
So we had that. We had the Fighters and the Hawks had an interesting series in which the new fighter, Sachi Yamasaki, outpitched the old fighter, Kohei Arihara.
Mm-hmm.
We had, I think those were the series that really caught my attention. The Lions got beat up pretty, they were swept by the Marines 5-0 on Tuesday, and then the Marines beat them 3-2 on Wednesday. And that was the whole series in which Natsuki Takeuchi, the most sought after pitcher in last year's draft, pitched really well again.
And then got sent out to the minors afterwards. Yeah.
Probably. Well, we had a lot of that blame game going on this week, which is kind of interesting. Albert Abreu had a really tough 10th inning in which he basically got a jam shot to open the inning and then an error. And then he threw probably the worst pitch he's thrown in a long time to Neftali Soto. And he had this look like, why me? Why do I get punished for one mistake?
Yeah.
And we'll get to why that matters here in a second when we talk about the Central League.
All right. Well, let's get to the Central League. And I do want to acknowledge that the Dragons are winning. You know, they're a humble, what now? Five now, I think.
No, they have a... I believe now they have a 7-game unbeaten streak, which includes one tie.
Tie, yeah, yeah.
And that's the first time since 2019.
6 years, yeah. Well, they said 6 years on the...
Oh, did they? 2018, yeah, well, then. Yeah. I'm sorry, 2018. Okay.
Yeah, so they're 5 games over 500 at the moment, and they swept Yokohama in Yokohama. And Yokohama, the past two seasons, had, if not had a pink slip that said Dragons on it, they certainly had a birth certificate that said that they were the Dragons' father because they had beaten them like they owned them. So for the
Dragons, who's your daddy? I like that.
So having the Dragons sweep a series up there in Yokohama was good for their confidence, obviously. But they had an inning in one of those games, I think it was the middle game, in which they barely hit the ball out of the infield and they scored two runs. And you know, last season.
Well, it wasn't a middle game. They only played two, so yeah.
Yeah, I have the two game series. Okay, so they swept a series.
They
up there.
They did that game. I noticed that too. I was working with a Dragons fan I was working with a football writer who grew up in Aichi Prefecture.
Mm.
So he does. He was saying, "Oh, Tatsunami Magic," and I just about choked on.
Yeah, I am choking. Somebody said that to me at the office. And I said, "That's not magic. That's just hocus pocus."
I choked on the onigiri I was eating.
Yeah, yeah.
So that game, yeah, mention it, was Takahiro Matsuba's season debut, and he had a really good game. He had a bunt single. He hit a bunt single and an RBI single.
And his ball and the RBI single was the hardest hit ball of that inning. It was practically
the hardest hit ball of the night. Yeah. The Dragons were learning new ways to get the ball off the bat. You know, they made Hunter Pence with the time he got a hit that the ball hit a broken bat three times.
I kind of remember that.
And dribbled. Yeah, I think it was in the playoffs or something. Mm-hmm, yeah, in 2014. Playoff. And that looked like their role model. I mean, that's like what Kazuhiro Wada was teaching them to do, because it was like dribble, drabble, pop the ball over their heads, hit it at their feet so they can't. And it was amazing. He was saying, wow, they've Dragons got like 8 hits. I'm going, dude, they don't deserve any.
Yeah, maybe they have one actual hit and the rest of them are just balls that just, you know, ran away from gloves. Yeah. Or even they found gloves. They just,
yeah, it's I said they won the lucky hit lottery. Yeah. You know, every ball in play pretty much got him a runner on base, but Matsuba did pitch well, so more credit to that. I think it's the thing with the Dragons is that two guys who look like they, they don't look like it really hit. The top two guys of the order, Hironori Miyoshi and Mikiya Tanaka, were on base 5 times and scoring all the runs in the previous day's game.
Yeah, Miyoshi, I really like his swing. I like how he looks at the plate. Tanaka is just a battler. You know, he's got one of those right-handed, not a strong swing, but it's not a slappy swing. So he has the ability to do what he's doing, which is get the ball over the infield and get it in front of the outfielders. That's about it.
So, yeah, very, very strange.
But, yeah, the thing I'm looking at the Dragons and I'm seeing is this is not sustainable, the win-loss side. On the win-loss side with this hunt and gather, you know, gathering nuts and berries kind of offense, they need to have some big game offense. And I think they had 10 hits in their win on Saturday night, but all singles. They're not getting a lot of extra base hits. And as much as I cannot root for Sho Nakata as a person, he is productive as a player. He's getting hits. He's knocking in runs with clutch hits in situations, you know, a couple of two out, at least I remember two out, one in the Hiroshima series, two out single to knock in a run, one here in the series that they're playing currently to knock in a run. So he is doing that for them, but 5 games over 500 early, probably overachieving for a team that again is hunting nuts and berries with their singles. Okay.
Well, the pitching has been pretty much, that is, you know, as much as I besmirch our spotless record of our preview shows, or our spotty records of our preview shows, the pitching has been pretty much as we predicted, which is the starting pitching has been extremely competent.
Yes, right now tops team ERA tops in Japan, so 1.61.
So that was interesting. The Giants have swept all 4 games this week, so they're joining the Carp in sort of the surprising area. And the one that got me was Tomoyuki Sugano, showing us the sort of I don't know what you would call it, but this guy is going up and pitching by the numbers. In that, you know, it's like the strike zone is a paint by numbers thing for him. And he's going, okay, curveball here, slider here. Okay. Oh, you're out. Okay. Next. And his location is as precise, more precise than it has been in his entire career, which is, and it was always good. That was the thing. His command was always the best part of his game, but he had the ability to throw hard and throw pitches with weird breaks sometimes. But he doesn't have that. He doesn't have the velocity. He's just up there with a paintbrush. And this new Sugano might be better than the old one. Of course, he hasn't really pitched. I mean, he pitched against the Dragons when they weren't this week's Dragons and hitting everything to where people can't catch them
or something.
Yeah. Hitting them so people bobble the ball. And then he pitched against the Swallows who haven't been hitting a ton either, but he's been looking really good. And he had a tremendous pitcher's duel with Keiji Takahashi, who listeners know kind of have a baseball crush on him. Cause I just love his fastball, and he's back and he pitched really well, but that game blew up on him. The Carp and Tigers had a heck of a series. The Carp finally scored a run, which I wrote as, what is it? Let's say the Carp have scored, or I forget what I wrote about it, so I'll leave it. But
yeah, they finally scored, breaking what, a 4-4 game Four-game shutout.
36 innings.
Span in 36 innings. And then they scored like they had been doing it all season. You know, they scored a bunch of runs. And
oh, there it was. And it scored at last. Scored at last. Thank gosh. The almighty. The Carp have scored at last. And they roughed up. And Masashi, Tigers lefty Masashi Ito came out of that game. Like, you guys told me they couldn't hit.
Hit, yes. You said I could throw the ball here. He had that look on his face. You're not supposed to hit that pitch in that situation. He had that numerous times. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a guy I love. I mean, he had a really great season last year, but he was like, hey,
the year
hold on
before
a second.
Too, yeah.
Somebody lied to me. So in that game, that was the Wednesday game, and Makoto Ajiwa, who has basically not, you know, he was a big sort of like, oh, this guy can really play when he was a rookie. You know, in his first camp, he impressed a lot of people, but now he's 2-0 and he had a hit and struck out 9 guys in 5 2/3 innings. Shoki Murakami had a huge game on Tuesday, 7 innings, sacrifices the eventual winning run in a 1-0 game in which there were about 5 hits in the entire game. And then the Carp win another 1-0 game over Daichi Osera, wins a game and outduels, he doesn't outduel Yuki Nishi. Yuki Nishi goes 8 scoreless innings, and the only run scores when Akinobu Okada's small ball playbook blows up the game when a 2-out routine fly drives in the game's only run.
Yeah, yeah. And another
you know,
one
I thought, yeah. You know, Swallows fans are standing in solidarity with the shocked Tigers fans.
I bet. Yeah, a lot of great action. I'm having fun trying to watch these games. And I've been lucky on the flipping the channels. I get to the games when something's happening and get off of them when there's nothing happening. So I've been lucky. Anyway, we got a transition. Mm-hmm. Let's make a 4-seam transition and go rocking with Roki. Now, he threw this past Sunday, he throws today, so unfortunately we don't get to do these fresh, so to speak, but hopefully
yeah, you need
I'm
to
hoping
go, like,
he gets off
a,
of this Sunday schedule.
Yeah, stick a pin in him so he misses the day.
Yeah, hopefully. So, but last week he struggled early on Sunday, but he kind of went to a slider as an out pitch, and he wriggled through 7 innings, and from the 3rd to the 7th, the only runner to reach was Leandro Cedeño on a hit-by-pitch. So he threw a career high 111 pitches. So it looks like they're taking
which
some
surprised
of
me. It seemed like he'd thrown a couple more. He was always on the verge of throwing more than that in a couple of games.
But yeah, you know, apparently they're still keeping. You know, they don't want him to throw max effort and really cut loose on the fastball, and they're trying to get him to be more of a pitcher. But he really wasn't comfortable in those first 2 innings. He goes 7 innings. Again, 111 pitches, 2 runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, a hit batter, struck out 9, and Lotte won the game 5-2 over Oryx. So, yeah, you know, hoping that we see that fastball return to life, because I just see him aiming it, and he's getting it into places where it can be hit. But when he's throwing...
Well, that's always been the case, but yeah.
Yeah, when he's throwing and using that splitter just as his off-speed pitch and getting it to float and drop down, then he's devastating, because if you're looking fastball, you're not going to hit it. You know, you're not going to hit that splitter anyway, but if you're looking fastball, you got no chance. And moving toward that slider that we hadn't seen very much of and using that as an out pitch, I really like that in terms of him being able to mix it up and really keep batters off balance. So he's growing.
He hasn't thrown a curveball yet this year, which is a little bit interesting. The curveball was, well, he used the curveball pretty much the way most starting pitchers use it in Japan, which is a first pitch called strike pitch.
Yeah.
About three times a game. And Shohei Ohtani was in his first spring training, there was a comment from an MLB scout that he looks like he's never seen a curveball before because Japanese pitchers don't throw them. And my answer to that was, if you can't throw a first pitch curveball for a strike in Japan, you can't join the starting pitchers union.
That's right.
Required. So, I mean, everyone maybe only throws it 2 or 3 times a game, but that was his thing. He hasn't thrown it yet this season. But yes, the comment I won't repeat what you said because it was spot on. The one comment I would make about Roki Sasaki was that his velocity, his average velocity, which tended to be very high at the start of the season since 2022, and this past week was, of course, the second anniversary of his perfect game. His velocity was very high at the start of the season and dropped. Well, his velocity, his average four-seam velocity last year was 155.1 kilometers per hour, which is about 98 miles an hour.
Okay.
Well, he's down to about 96 now. And his average velocity was probably about 99 at the start of last season. And now it's probably under 96.
Right.
And so, and he made a kind of, he made an indecipherable, almost a non sequitur comment in his hero, in his post game interview. I believe it was not the hero interview, where he said, "I'm not tired because I'm not throwing as hard. I'm not throwing as fast as I used to."
Mm-hmm.
And now typically it's very rare for somebody not to try, you know, in today's game, not to throw in the area where they're most comfortable, okay, being, you know, the most comfortable maximum effort, you know, the sort of cruising speed, let's call it, where they can,
sure,
they can control the pitches and they will not be overly fatigued by that speed, that they can maintain it. As you know, the cruising speed, the speed at which your fastball can sit, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that he is not hitting cruising speed on his fastball. And I think as we get into the next conversation, I believe that is by design, from something that his manager, Masato Yoshi, told me in March.
Okay. Well, let's make that seamless transition and talk about Tommy John surgeries and NPB now. They're such a controversy right now in the United States with the Tommy John surgeries and pitcher related injuries being at an epidemic proportion. And, you know, we don't see that in MPB. So I started thinking, okay, we lost Gerrit Cole, we lost Spencer Strider in the United States. We don't get to see those guys pitch with kind of devastating injuries. They're out for the season. But I've just noticed over, I don't know, a decade or more than a decade, in particularly covering Japanese pitchers in this job, in this role that I have had, that we don't see the disappearance of some of the top pitchers over a stretch. We didn't see Masahiro Tanaka get injured. We didn't see Kenta Maeda get injured. We didn't see Daisuke Matsuzaka get injured. There are a lot of top pitchers who we just saw them and we expected them to be around each year, and they were. But obviously, as soon as they go to the States and they change routines and they start throwing that ball, that we've seen them undergo Tommy John as well. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And we just don't see that in Japan. So I said it years ago on the show, and I'll say it again. Maybe NPB has it right. Maybe it's best to have guys pitch once a week, not have them dress a couple days and come to the ballpark, but get them off their feet, have them rest, do whatever routine things that they have to do, and then get them back to the ballpark and have them go, and they're recovered, or there's no pain or whatever the pitchers are experiencing, but they seem to be doing better. And, you know, we see guys like Masanori Ishikawa of Yakult. We see, as you mentioned earlier, Takahiro Matsuba of the Dragons and others who opt for control and smarts and setting up hitters and don't rely on velocity, heavy velocity. And we heard Cody Ponce say that he gets antsy after a few days and that he wants to get out there. But, you know, since we love seeing our best MLB pitchers and best pitchers, period, that we keep them on the sidelines a little bit for their own benefit. But it's also for our benefit so that we get to see them pitch instead of hear about them undergoing Tommy John and you know, talking about Shohei Ohtani and others whom we'd love to see pitch, but they're injured. And just because Ohtani's a two-way player, we still get to see him as a batter, but, you know, I want to see him on the mound too. I want to see him throwing. So I reached out to Jim and said, hey, you know, we don't routinely see our pitchers out f- for a year with Tommy John here. Jim said, came back immediately with the response I totally expected. He says, do you know that? And I said, well, no, I don't know it. I have a sense that there, you know, I've seen a lot of good pitchers. Now, we have some pitchers who don't even make it that far. We have young pitchers whose arms get blown out before they leave high school and they're out of the sport. Or we have college pitchers or some pitchers along the way who don't make it. But the ones who get, who are strong enough and are not sustaining injuries up to that point, or even some who do but get through it, have that in MPV, have that whole week to rest. And almost a week, I should say, 6 days to rest between starts. And we're not seeing, and to me, I'm not sensing a lot of Tommy John. I'm not saying there are none, but we don't have the number that we're seeing in the States, and it's not epidemic proportion. Well, Jim said, well, I'm going to reach out to somebody who actually knows what they're talking about and not listen to John. So
that's,
we'll be fine.
That was only implied. That wasn't said.
It was only implied.
Hashtag. Hi.
So, okay, I talked to Dr. Kozo Furushima, who used to do, I don't think he still does because I think the workload got to be too much, but he used to be do the most Tommy John surgeries in Japan, and his clinic in well, not his clinic, but the clinic where he works in Gunma Prefecture was doing the bulk of them, but that's no longer the case. And his answer was, okay, I looked, you know, I had heard this, and of course this topic came up because the MLB Players Association president, Tony Clark, said, this is, all these injuries are MLB's fault because of the pitch timer. We don't like it. We don't want to get rid of it.
Yeah, this never happened before. This was not epidemic proportions before that stupid pitch clock.
Exactly. So
Homer Simpson.
Yeah, it was pretty much. But Bill James did a great study in which he basically categorized pitchers by the quality of their quality relative to the league. It was a very simplistic study, but he basically divided MLB into pitchers into four groups. And the A group were there's 30 teams, so the top 30 pitchers in a season. And then the B group and the C group and the D group. And of course, most of the pitchers are in the C and D group. But it was like the top 30 and then the next 60. And then it was like the next 60 after that, and then everybody else. And what he found out was that 40 years ago, you know, A pitchers tended to stay A pitchers. And B pitchers were, you know, they might have a season where they were an A pitcher, but they were largely Bs and an occasional C. Mm-hmm. Pitchers more or less stayed where they were. But now what you have are A pitchers who are suddenly C pitchers and then bounce back 3 years later and become A pitchers again. Where they're, you know, they go from B to D to D to B, 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 D, like that. And he said, the thing is that the basic difference is that it's probably injury. It's not gradual. It's really good pitchers suddenly become non-effective pitchers. And that was less common. And I think there's one reason for that is, of course, 30 years or I should say 50 years ago, when you blew out your arm, your career was over and it's no longer over. So guys who did blow out their arms, they went AAAC, see you later. So anyway, Dr. James Andrews had some comments. Dr. James Andrews was basically the successor to Dr. Frank Job, who invented the Tommy John procedure. And he said, I started following the injury pattern. This is what Dr. James Andrews said the other day. He tweeted this, or it was his copy, was his comments were tweeted out and were in a few articles here and there. He said, I started following the injury patterns and injury rates in the year 2000. Back in those days, I did about 8 or 9 Tommy Johns per year in high school and younger. The large majority of Tommy Johns were at the major league level, then the minor league level, then the college level, and then just a handful of high school kids. In today's situation, the whole thing is flip-flopped. The largest number is youth baseball. They've surpassed what's being done in MLB, and that's a terrible situation. Now, he went on to describe his analysis, which was that velocity is killing these kids' arms because in his belief, the tendons, the ligaments and tendons in the elbow and shoulder, the soft tissue do not fully mature until the age of 26 or 27. Whoa. But now these kids are doing the weight training and they're doing the advanced metrics, showing them how to maximize their velocity when they're teenagers.
Mm.
And they're learning how to throw faster than professional, than most MLB pitchers could throw in the early 60s. And they're high school kids, and their bone structure might be enough to manage it. And they might, and they have all this muscle on their arms that allows them in their bodies, that allows them to do upper body, lower body strength, but their arms can't handle the strain. Now, I asked Dr. Furushima about the increase in Tommy John, and it was an unfortunately phrased question, because the real question I wanted to answer was, are elbow sprain pitching injuries increasing?
Mm.
And I asked about Tommy John, thinking sort of like, well, if Tommy, you know, that's the answer. But he said Tommy Johns are going down, but
in Japan,
among professionals. He said that Tommy John surgeries are going down in Japan, but the new alternative surgery, which is taking the damaged ligament and wrapping it in a carbon filament support to strengthen it, is now rapidly on the rise. I got the computer programmer's bane, which is asking the question you thought you wanted and getting the answer the computer thought you wanted.
Mm.
So he said essentially what Dr. James Andrews said, that he said youth baseball injuries are slowing because at just before the start of COVID, in 2019, the youth baseball federations were beginning to look at pitch limits and making sure, adopting American guidelines for youth baseball, and even the high school baseball put in some kind of pitch restrictions.
Right, in Japan.
In Japan. And he said youth baseball injuries are down, but he said college injuries are skyrocketing.
Mm.
And in relation to that, I would add that this week we had another first round draft choice, a professional pitcher out of college, had Tommy John, and he was the second. There were nine pitchers taken in last autumn's NPB draft, and two of them have had Tommy John surgery.
Mm.
So it's not uncommon. It is what it is, but I think the Dr. James Andrews explanation explains a couple of things. And now let me add what Masato Yoshi told me. I asked him about, because Yoshi is studying, he's doing graduate, he did a master's program, mm-hmm, in physical education, focusing on coaching techniques. And he said the whole thing opened up his eyes to research, the world of research, in that even if you don't know something from your own experience, and the people you are speaking with don't know from your own experience, you can know from other people's research that if you do this one thing, this, mm-hmm, other thing will result.
Right.
And then I said, asking specifically about Roki Sasaki, I said, was the reason, just to confirm what I'd read, the reason you kept him from pitching in his first game, his first season, and held him back so much since then, was due to inflammation in his pitching arm? And was that related to his low bone density in high school? And he said, yes, but that is not an issue just for Roki Sasaki. Now he kind of spun again. He spun it a little differently. And he said, with a lot of pitchers coming out of high school, we have to be very careful about putting too much muscle on their bodies because it can lead to injuries. And as soon as I read what Dr. James Andrews said,
right,
and thought about Roki Sasaki's velocity and his comment that he wasn't throwing hard, and what Yoshi said, it kind of struck me. So that's when it sort of the bell rang. And I believe that Sasaki is basically under orders not to throw, not even max. He's not allowed to go near maximum velocity, not because he can't, but to protect his arm so that he can turn into a mature pitcher.
Mm. Which is something I suspected.
And I think we all suspected, but yeah.
Sure. And I've been saying unleash him. And, you know, once in a while when you need something and you can rear back and find it. But that also leads to maybe why the team is not so anxious to let him go to the States, because they're developing him and want to keep him around so that when he does mature, the team can benefit from that.
But
at the same time, time keeps ticking along and he's going to become a free agent anyway. And he started as a young player. So he's in position to go do a Yoshinobu Yamamoto style and go over at 25 if he wants to, because he'll be eligible. I mean,
well, he'll be eligible,
but he'll probably be able to get posted by that time.
Eligible to be treated as an MLB by MLB as an international free agent, as opposed to as Shohei Ohtani was, as an international amateur. In other words, Lotte's return for his posting fee could be in the area of 300 to 400 times as much.
Yeah. So interesting. And, you know, again, all I'm doing is going off of what I've noticed. I didn't have any facts or number or data to back it up, but go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you again, because it was the last thing I wanted to mention was that, you know, you mentioned the extra rest, and I'll say that professional baseball has been dealing with this issue really ever since the 1970s, ever since 1969, when MLB regulated the mounds, the size of pitchers' mounds,
mm-hmm.
and they made the strike zone smaller, and they stopped allowing pitchers essentially to throw at hitters.
Yes.
That was baseball. That was MLB's response to the Mantle and Maris home run race in 1961, when two expansion teams playing in they were cramped. They weren't even cozy. They were cramped parks, and you know, everybody said it was expansion, but they played in two of MLB's nightmare home run parks, and that it caused an offensive explosion, and the commissioner had a knee-jerk reaction, and so suddenly they got 8 years of Japanese baseball now, in which there were home runs, but there was not a lot of run scoring because teams were striking out 12 times a game. So in any case, what happened after that was in the 70s, young pitchers coming up trying to do what older pitchers had done in the 60s were becoming the next a whole generation of Mark Fidrichs.
Mm-hmm.
You might not remember Mark Fidrich.
Birdman.
Oh yeah, okay. But he was just a tremendous pitcher, and he pitched a ton of innings. And his
Detroit Tigers, yes.
That's correct. And his career was done after 3 years, and it was pitcher after pitcher after pitcher. These young kids, they put them under big workloads. And so from that, we went from a four-man rotation to a five-man rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was part of the puzzle, but it didn't really solve it. It mitigated the problem, but didn't solve it.
Right.
And then I think the next big step was about, I want to say about 15 years ago, about 2000, about about 2000 or 2005 in that area, somebody came up with a research study, which is now so obvious. It's like a Sir Isaac Newton kind of thing, you know, the apple falling off the tree and him going, oh, you know, the earth sucks. It's gravity.
The earth sucks because of humans, but not because of gravity.
But I know, but that's the joke, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a science joke. I'm sorry. The study was that somebody measured the velocity of relief pitchers and starting pitchers, and they found out, you know what? Relief pitchers throw harder. If you took a starting pitcher and you had him only throw one inning a game, he'd start throwing harder. And it was like, you know, it was so obvious, but nobody had ever measured it before.
Sure.
And so that has started this craze where let's have more pitchers throwing fewer innings, to where everybody's maxing out velocity. And now we've got all the measuring techniques at drive line and the high tech allowing players to hone their abilities. And we've got, I think that's really the cause of this epidemic. And so that's just me, but these things are all happening, whether that's the cause or whatnot. But people have debated, you know, I don't know. I don't think actually the one day off and the 6 days in between starts is the answer.
Sure.
But it is a possible, it might be part of the answer.
Gotcha. Well, I always look at the fact that these MPB pitchers go over to the States and the ball is a little bit different. It's a little heavier, right?
The size is different. It is.
They pitch every 5 days. They travel more. They're in a completely different situation. And people say, what's wrong with this guy? We were told he was the greatest thing since sliced bread. He's not doing what we expected him to do. And I'm thinking, well, you have him in a different situation. Why would you expect the same results?
There have been more, but there have been many pitchers. I mean, of course, one of my favorite pitchers, Shohei Tateyama, was a guy who never threw it particularly hard, and he was a sidearmer, but he had 3 Tommy John surgeries.
Sure.
It has happened. There have been guys, plenty of guys in Japan who have had it. But it's not the answer, but it's a answer. And yes. Dr. Furushima said to me, eventually, one of the problems is that every pitcher's body is different.
Sure.
Daisuke Matsuzaka famously had a tremendously thick ligaments in his elbow. So that when the Boston, you know, 3 years before his Tommy John surgery, a Boston Red Sox chief international scout told me, when we looked at his MRIs, we were amazed that we'd never seen a 26-year-old's arm look so clean.
Mm.
But if you throw enough, and this is what Dr. Furushima told me a few years ago, if you throw enough, it won't be.
True. Well, I'm wondering if MLB would consider, you know, maybe even changing its ball, thinking about 6-man rotations, sending pitchers ahead to cities before they play series so they can get some rest. But, you know, those are all things that the major league teams have to decide, not us.
You know, wouldn't it be wild if you know what would be the most bizarre thing is if NPB now is, as I was saying, I think probably doctoring its baseballs to make them dead, if the reason for that is not to prevent pitching injuries. I mean, that would be the most bizarre thing, because A, that would require forethought and planning, and something that is pretty much absent in Japan, but in Japanese professional baseball management, and be reasonable. Another thing that's often absent.
Absent. Yes. My goodness, look at the time. We were supposed to have High Heat, but I don't think we're going to be able to get to it. So we're going to have to change the lineup for next week. Just skip all the interesting games and go straight to the High Heat or something like that. Or we'll tell all the teams not to play any interesting games. That'll solve the problem.
Yeah, we need them to go back to the 1980s and 90s then, and just be bunting all the time and have every game be a cookie cutter, attempt to be a cookie cutter version of the previous day's game.
Yeah, and absolutely no drama. No, Mr. Yamakawa, stop hitting those grand slams and making the games interesting. Just sit down.
Well, okay, no big research topics next week then.
All right.
That's probably the bigger answer.
Well, we promise to get to the high heat next week, but if you do have some high heat, please send it to us via twitter.com at JBWPodcast with the hashtag high heat. Send email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. You can also go to our Facebook page and leave us a message there. Look for us on iTunes and Google Podcasts. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at them ballparks, boring or not.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.